Lowe's helps refresh your garden in time for Mother's Day. Right now, get 5 bags of 1.5 cubic foot Scotts Naturescapes mulch for just $10. Plus, select 1.5 gallon annuals hanging baskets make the perfect gift. Now 2 for only $15. The best garden starts with great deals. Lowe's. We help. You save. Valid through 5/7. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, discount taken at time of purchase.
About the great, big, beautiful bill, you know, that we're trying to get passed. It'll be the biggest tax cuts in the history of our country. And hopefully it'll get done. And the Democrats are fighting us. And if it doesn't get done, it's going to be a 68% tax increase. So that's going to be the Democrats. But I think we're going to have it done. I think the Republicans are going to vote for it. And it'll be the most consequential bill, I think, in the history of our country.
Leader Thune says he wants to get it done by July 4th.
Yeah.
Do you think that's possible?
I think it is. And I think he's doing a fantastic job. And Mike Johnson, Speaker, is doing a fantastic job. And they're both getting together well. There's great unity in the Republican Party. The Republican Party is a much different party than it was.
So he's keeping the criticism to Democrats, but there was a hint of Republicans, you know, you got to get this passed. Otherwise, it's going to be a big, giant tax increase. And he's right in saying that. And I'm glad that he's throwing it down, because it needs to happen. And he needs to start bringing pressure on some of these lawmakers. Although in the Senate, he was talking about Thune in the Senate. I think it's a lot easier in the Senate. Obviously with the House, with the narrow majority, but he was talking to Kristen Welker there, taking her through the White House, talking about the big, beautiful bill. We got some domestic news on that front. Welcome back to the program. Dana Loesch with you. We're at the top of this first hour on Monday. Yeah, again, it's not my fault that it's rainy and very British here in Texas. Kane and I are going to start getting accents on this Cinco de Mayo. So it's going to happen. So yeah, you don't eat a taco salad today, or you're going to be a bigot. At least only you can only eat half, Kane, for your Hispanic side. So welcome, Dana Loesch with you. You remember, okay, first off, I can't even discuss anything else today until we talk about that infamous day back in 2016. When, you remember this, Kane? POTUS said, you know, the best taco salads, I got to say it like he would, are the taco salads at Trump Tower. It looks like a mighty fine taco salad. Can I just be honest? He did this in 2016, and the left lost their minds to the point where this trended on X for like 2 days straight. And he goes, I love the Hispanics, is what he said. Why was the left so mad about this? They were so mad. Why? I mean, he's eating a taco salad and he's like, I love the Hispanics. It's a great, okay, what's the bad thing about it? Taco salads are delicious, Kane.
Yeah.
Although technically maybe not a traditional meal in the way that it was served to him. But still, you know, it's the thought that counts. It's the spirit of the thing, you know?
It looked like a very traditional taco bowl.
Yeah, you know. I mean, you know, probably it looked delicious. I would like to have a taco salad now with Cinco de Mayo. So happy Cinco de Mayo. There you go, right there. I got a million things here that he's, trade deals. Here's one that I wanted to, this was, I thought, a very interesting move. I read this over the weekend. So a big, they're not the only ones. Land Rover also did something similar. So one luxury car maker, they said, is making a huge call. I saved you a click. It's Mercedes-Benz. They're shifting production of one of its vehicles to Tuscaloosa, Alabama by 2027. That's interesting. Very interesting. And they said that obviously it's in response to tariffs, but they said that there are some other complicating factors. They didn't say which model would move there. They said the production of a core segment vehicle will move stateside. They think that, by they, I mean like the experts, they think that the move is going to impact the production of the GLC. That's their best-selling car in the U.S. And that, it's a compact SUV that's made in Bremen, Germany. And so the speculation is that is the model that they are moving to Tuscaloosa, Alabama. That is very interesting. They said that they reported selling over 64,000 units in the U.S., up 58% from the year before. And Alabama, they said, might, you know, that's looks like where they're going to be moving their production. They're in and out of factory. They said they're reviewing the moves. Obviously, it's in response to all of the stuff with the tariffs. And they said that it could affect, some of these other moves could affect GLE, GLS, GLE Coupe, Mercedes-Maybach GLS, and all of those call Alabama home as well. So they're moving more over. That is very good. Land Rover, too. Let me pull this story up. Because Land Rover also, I think they said that they, because they had paused, Jaguar Land Rover had paused shipments because of the tariffs. And now they have restarted all of those. They've resumed exports to the United States, according to all the, according to reports. The London Times first had the story. They said that there was, so it's going to be like a month behind, but they said the U.S. was a key market for luxury brands. 25% tariffs are still in effect. So they're going to get here, but it's going to be a little pricier. It's going to be just a little pricier, I have to say. So that's one of the things that they're, that's what they're looking at. And so those are some, that's a good signal. That's a good first step. Now, POTUS says that there could be some of these trade deals that could be announced this week. We need them announced now. I understand that you don't want to announce things too early and you don't want to jeopardize anything, but we need these now. This is some stuff that we need. We got to have this all now. And we, I think the sooner the better, because that's just going to make, it's going to make it that much easier for Republicans going into midterms, because otherwise, yes, it is all about elections. Otherwise, you're going to have impeachment palooza. They'll impeach him for anything. Clearly, they already demonstrated that they don't need a criminal action in order to do it. So he said that some of these deals with trading partners could very well be announced this week. And he didn't specify any of the countries. The schedule, he announced today that the NFL draft is going to be held in D.C. in 2027. And he met with this morning a ballerina who spent a year in a Russian prison because she was accused. She sent like a little donation to Ukraine, and the Ruskies threw in the, they threw in the pokey. An actual ballerina. So there you go. But he hasn't said, he hasn't given any specificity as to what those what those trade deals could look like. Now, one of the things that we do know is that they've been pushing these budget cuts, cuts to the FBI, cuts to the DOJ. The latest from the Washington Times, getting into all of this. I mean, we all knew this was coming. These proposed cuts. It's part of a $163 billion that they're looking in reducing federal spending for this. For, well, those are slices of it. The overall budget, $545 million in cuts to the FBI, other Justice Department agencies. It's $163 billion in total. So the they said while still reducing crime at all and reversing the weaponization of the FBI as well. So the FBI headquarters in Maryland, apparently that's also going to get halted. He says it's 3 hours away from the agency's present location. It's silly to keep building it, he had said. So this is going to be kind of interesting to see how there's some, these cuts that have been proposed. Then, of course, we also have ATF. Apparently, there's a $468 million funding reduction that has been proposed for the ATF. And they said that the proposal... They said it was, because it was weaponized. The ATF was absolutely weaponized. I have a story for you later on to discuss that further. The ATF is a joke. I've talked with ATF agents. I don't care how good of a heart you may have. When you're pushing nonsense, that's rendered invalid. No matter what you're, if you think that, you know, oh, I'm going to go in and work in the ATF on the inside, you're already working for an unconstitutional entity. So what do you think your presence in an unconstitutional entity is going to change about said unconstitutional entity? It's still unconstitutional. And the way that they have pursued what they believe is law and order has been to the detriment of the rule of law and due process. I mean, shall I go on? So there's cuts also for DEA. All kinds of stuff. So a lot of but again, we have to have all of this codified. I can sit here and run down this laundry list. I am not one of those people that gets excited about temporary things. I want to see it all made permanent. And I got to tell you, my patience is running thin with some, because we knew we didn't have a lot of time. My patience is running really thin with a lot of these Republicans, because not with this not getting done, they're going to use it to tank the rest of his administration. Now, the other big thing that he proposed, let me put this up. So this was CNBC. Interesting. He's ordering 100% tariffs on foreign-made movies to save dying Hollywood. This was something that was announced over the weekend. He said there was a concerted effort by nations, by other nations, and it's a national security threat. He said it's messaging and propaganda. He said he was authorizing relevant government agencies, such as the Department of Commerce, to immediately begin the process of imposing a 100% tariffs on all films produced abroad that are then sent into the United States. Now, I understand that. I also think that you're not going to be able to solve a cultural issue at the top. You can't solve an issue that is kind of at the bottom by just trying to regulate at the top. I mean, I understand it. I think that, first off, taxes need to be just abolished all around. Let's have a graduating, you know. It all does all come down to that, because it comes down to that with the business climate, too. There have been a number of agencies, including, there's one that's been, that's just right up the highway from us in Las Colinas, Mel Gibson and his team that are doing the sequel to The Passion of the Christ. I think it's the same team that was behind Apocalypto and some of the other ones that he did. And they're creating, they have this production company that they're launching in Texas to make, you know, these types of movies. One of the biggest problems, and I think when what Trump is talking about by looping in the Commerce Department, is a lot of the financing comes from overseas. And because the financing comes from overseas, that gives a lot of these, you know, producers, you know, you can donate, you know, millions of dollars to this budget, and you can be named as a producer. A lot of it that's done, actually. And they influence, obviously, the outcome of the movie. One of the most famous ones, you know, obviously Top Gun, Tencent, and they ended up pulling a lot of support out of that, and they didn't get a Chinese opening because they weren't going to take the Taiwanese flag off of Maverick's jacket. At first they did in some of the early screen tests, but then it played so poorly with the public they had to go back. They had to go back to the cutting room floor and pick up the well, I guess they don't edit celluloid anymore, but they had to go back and restore it digitally because they had taken it off, and it enraged people across the United States. But then that enraged Tencent. So, but I understand this. I also think, too, it's not going to just be fixed from the top. This is something, it's a cultural problem in the United States. You know, you can't, it's like putting a Band-Aid on it by trying to fix it with regulatory policy at the top. And I understand people are like, yes, we want immediate, you know, we want it to change, and we want it to change immediately. Don't fall into the trap in thinking that it is the same, that you're going to get the same thing because you're sacrificing speed, because you're going to sacrifice, you know, getting everything that you want because you want it done fast. It's that immediate gratification. This is stuff that's been in the works in the United States for years. And you're not going to undo it in just one, you know, one term. It's just not going to happen. But I do think making it overall to make things here in the United States so that people don't have to seek overseas funding that in turn influence what we make is a good thing. We got to get into some of this other stuff because people lost their minds over the AI Pope. But did you hear what they're doing with Jesus Christ Superstar? Well, yeah, in addition to Cynthia Erivo, what does living better mean to you? Is it more money, a bigger house? Now think about this. What about how you feel physically every day? Life is so much better when you feel good. When you wake up feeling great, you can do more of the things that you love and you're ready to take on the day. If pain is affecting your life, see how Relief Factor can help change that. Relief Factor is a 100% drug-free daily supplement that helps your body fight pain naturally. Developed by doctors, Relief Factor supports your body's response to inflammation. And it doesn't just mask pain for a short time. It helps to reduce or even eliminate it. And it's safe to take daily. In fact, the longer you take Relief Factor, the more effective it is. Over 1 million people have turned to Relief Factor. Feel better every day and you'll live better every day. Trying Relief Factor is easy. Get their 3-week quick start for only $19.95. That's less than a dollar a day. Call 1-800-4-RELIEF. That's 1-800-4-RELIEF. Or visit relieffactor.com.
Plan on flying? In order to board domestic flights, your driver's license or state-issued ID must be a real ID. Learn how to get your real ID today at tsa.gov/real ID or visit your local DMV.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
Okay, so first thing, an air traffic controller is warning that a major airport is unsafe for travel, claiming that you should avoid Newark at all costs. that it's just a hot mess. It's not safe. It's not a safe situation for the flying public, said Tom Costello. He said it's due to staff shortages. I think they've always had issues, though, correct? I think they always have. A robot attacked somebody in China. A humanoid robot was filmed attacking its handler while trying to break free from its restraints. Juan is going to show you this on the side. It is crazy. It goes nuts. That's me when someone says Green Day's punk. This is also why I don't get a Roomba. I don't get a Roomba because of this. It showed this thing lashed out at a dude. He had a duck, and it raised its arms, you can see, and it was just trying to thrash around and break free from the crane holding it. That is insane. I'm telling you, this is what's going to happen. Your Roomba is going to eat your face one day. You're going to wake up in the morning and it's going to be right over your face, killing you to death. That's what's going to happen. I'm just warning you right now. They're going to overthrow you. We've seen this movie before, you guys. We saw it before. Skype shut down after 21 years. I can't believe Skype was around for 21 years. Yeah. Microsoft Skype. 2 billion people used it. It was launched forever a million years ago. I cannot even believe that. There are people alive right now who, like, Skype is older than them. Yeah, that's so weird to me. So Skype is gone now. Let's see. A guy impaled himself on an iron fence because he was taking a selfie at the Colosseum in Rome, and he just sort of fell over one of the areas. People have got to be careful, like, especially in ancient sites. Stick with us. Goldco is making it easy to take that first step toward protecting your savings. Just fill out a quick form, no commitment, just free information. And then they'll ship you your free 2025 gold and silver kit straight to your door. No shipping fees, no strings, just a free info kit to help you understand how gold and silver can fit into your financial plan. I'm a big believer in doing your research, and this kit is a great place to start. So I'm really excited to be partnering with Goldco because not only do they support my show, which I truly appreciate, but they've made the whole process of buying precious metals super straightforward. Because if you're a fan of the show, Goldco is also going to tell you how to qualify for unlimited free bonus silver on eligible orders. If you qualify, you can even get a free half-ounce silver Ronald Reagan coin, totally free. Don't wait. Take that first step towards protecting and diversifying your savings with Goldco. Visit DanaLikesGold.com to learn more. That's DanaLikesGold.com.
The Dana Show Podcast, your fast, funny, and informative news companion for those always on the move. Subscribe on YouTube, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Many people don't know. I mean, much is not covered. You're paying for every food, every bit of food that you eat. You're not paying for housing and the staff in it. But everything, even travel, if you're not traveling with the president, if your kids are coming on a Bright Star, which is the first lady's plane, we had to pay for their travel.
Wow. I am just like the first, well, almost like the former first lady, because I still had to pay for my house, you know, as a human living here in the United States. It's former first lady, Princess Michelle Obama, Her Royal Highness or whatever. And I don't get people who have the world served to them on a silver platter, and yet still, they bitch. Don't get it. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash with you. Bottom of this first hour. Is that her podcast? I don't even pay attention to her podcast. I just, is that hers?
I don't know.
She's always behind some microphone talking about how hard her life is. Every day, every time that we have these sound bites go around. And this is a new one. And she's complaining about the fact that she had to, egads, pay for food
and travel.
What? You know what? When my kids and I, when my family, when we went to go, we took our kids to 30A down in the beautiful, beautiful Florida area. Beautiful, near Destin. It's just a gorgeous place down there. Can you believe that we had to pay for our own travel? I was like, what? And then get this. We had to pay for our own food. What?
The
outrage.
The oppression you had to deal with.
It's an outrage. It's totally outrage. I was shocked. Like, I thought all of these things would be given to me for free. And it wasn't. No, she's complaining because I guess she had a different idea of what she thought being the first lady was going to be like. Like, she was, all of that stuff was going to be just given to her. She was complaining about having to, I mean, it's still private air travel. You had to fly your, they walked out with like 20 something million dollars. I think they're okay. Didn't, how much money was he banking on book deals and speeches? I think y'all are going to be okay. I mean, y'all got a mansion in the Hamptons that's on the Atlantic beachfront. They also bought, oh my gosh, what was Tom Selleck, that Hawaiian show he did?
Magnum P.I.?
Magnum P.I. So the house that he apparently lived in for the show, like I guess it featured on the show, that's the house they bought in Hawaii, and it's like right there on the coast. In fact, there was a bit of a scandal because they were doing something to the shoreline that actually encouraged erosion and was against state law, but they were allowed to kind of do it anyway because they're the Obamas. So you have two beachfront properties in addition to the big old historic place that they, the pad that they have in Chicago. And they're complaining that they had to pay for food and travel. Like, some people don't even have a house. And you're complaining that you had to buy food and all of that for, I mean, what do you think that it was? This idea that positions in government are supposed to be everything subsidized, like you're a member of the royal family, is asinine. I mean, you are serving the public. It's not supposed to be a free-for-all. I mean, I realize that Democrats over the course of some years have transformed the expectation of public service to free-for-all, but it's not supposed to be like that. It's actually was supposed to actually kind of be a burden. And then people figured out a way to, you know, monetize everything and grift off of it. And Trump is, how much did you figure out? Trump, he's donated his White House salary. His presidential salary.
So over two terms, it would be $3.2 million total.
Can I just say, to be president of the United States and have to deal with all of that, I'm actually shocked that it's only 3.2. And that's probably before tax too, right?
Two terms.
Yeah. So that's pre-tax. So it's roughly half. Roughly half of that he's going to walk away with. But still, I mean, you know, again, it's supposed to be kind of burdensome. You're serving. And it somehow changed over the years to where now people want to get in on the grift and they just go right from college into public office, and I just don't get it. So she's complaining about having to pay for this stuff. She has always complained. She grew up privileged. She doesn't know poverty. The Obamas don't know poverty. He was raised by what, his grandparents, his grandmother or grandfather, which one was it? Vice president of a bank. His mom was this like bougie university professor. I mean, he had the most elite privileged childhood. They would die if they had to grow up in the poverty, for instance, that I knew, or regular middle class life that many of you out there listening know. They wouldn't be able to handle that. They grew up in privilege from the very beginning. They have no idea what struggle is. They have no idea what poverty is. They have no idea about any of it. And they have this idealized expectation of what public office is supposed to afford them as opposed to what they can bring to public office. I frankly am tired of hearing her bitch and moan about everything. She has to be one of the most negative people I've ever seen. I can't stand people like that. I cannot stand. And granted, I'm a curmudgeon and I'm a cynic, but to not find joy in anything, I mean, you're the first lady of the United States and you're still complaining. She acted like, oh, the world, half the country loved you and they voted your husband into office twice. So can you stop with the tiny violins? You are the most pampered, privileged person ever. You can never do anything wrong. And you're mad that you had to buy some sandwiches for your damn self, for the love. It's just good night. It's just shocking. But it's also insulting because it's like, oh, this is what you have to offer me for that. You knew what you were getting into running for the White House. But maybe be a little bit grateful for it, for the experience, instead of complaining that you had to fly your family. And by the way, when she's talking about flying her kids out, I remember there was one time when she hadn't complained because they were flying to Hawaii for vacation. And I remember it came up that somebody had asked about something and she had made an offhand remark that they paid for their daughters to fly out to Hawaii. And she said it so bitterly and with so much resentment that I thought maybe you ought to take a step back. You have the means to do it and the resources to do it. You are the one person of the 1% in this country. Every argument that you try to make for identity politics is turned on its head because of your life. And you're still complaining. Nothing's ever going to be good enough for these people. You know, if they have problems in their marriage, no wonder. She is like the ultimate Karen. Never happy. Constantly complaining. Nothing's ever good enough. It's just enough already. Heavens. So, over the weekend, Trump tweeted out, what was it? The AI image of him as Pope as a joke. And all of the people who hate religion somehow wanted to pretend to be very upset for the Catholics. I don't know if you guys saw this. So Trump tweeted out, it's very, you know, very, very nice Renaissance looking image of him as Pope with the number one. And tweeted it out or had it on his platform. And it went out from there and all the left got mad. You know, the left that hates all religion anyway, suddenly they were mad. And I was thinking about this when I saw this headline this morning. So there's a Hollywood Bowl production of Jesus Christ Superstar. Now, in Hollywood, because they're out of original ideas, they've had to sort of switch and modify their expectations of originality. And so now, instead of originality, they just want controversy because they think the two are synonymous. I mean, they're not, you know. I mean, Wick, by the way, you want to talk about like real controversy? Wick ate a baby bird. That's controversial. Probably more artistic than, you know, I know he did. That's a whole other story. Probably more artistic than what the Hollywood Bowl is planning to do with Jesus Christ Superstar. They have Cynthia Erivo, a black bald lesbian, a BBL, who's playing Jesus. And then Adam Lambert. Yeah, he's playing Judas. That actually seems fitting, you know, TBH. But everybody was mad about Trump with the AI Pope. Again, you got a BBL playing Jesus, but Trump with the AI Pope. Make that one make sense. I mean, it was a joke. He was making a joke. This, they're not making a joke. They're trying to offend. They're not even making a statement. The whole point is they want to offend. We've gotten so dumb in our culture. A lot of this stuff, especially with this production, they act like they're being thought-provoking. And that is, again, a substitute for originality, or controversy is a substitute for originality. Animals can be, they can do shocking things. Shock is cheap art. Shock isn't even art. It's a cheap imitation of art. It's when they can't actually do the artistic thing, so they settle for the cheap imitation of it, and they pretend that, oh, you're shocked? That's compelling. Is compelling a necessary requirement to be considered art? I don't think so. Not necessarily, especially when used and abused in this case. But all of these people that dragged him, I woke up, looked at the, because he tweeted it out in the morning. And he, you know, he doesn't sleep. He just blinks for long periods of time and that's it. But I saw that, what was it, Pope Trump or Trump Pope was trending. And I'm like, oh boy, what happened? So I looked and I saw the AI image. And I thought, that's funny. And then the left was mad. Oh my gosh, sacrilegious, blasphemous. What else were they saying? Like, I'm going through the Rolodex of adjectives in my mind. All of my Catholic friends thought it was funny. And I have some pretty hardcore Catholic friends. Like, I'm not Catholic. Some of my family was raised Catholic. My husband's family is Catholic. Part of them. I was raised Southern Baptist. Fun. But, and we're non-denominational. We're Church of Christ. But, you know, my Catholic friends have always been so nice in explaining, okay, this is why they're wearing the pointy hats. Because I'm like, what's up with these hats? And that's a little Dolce & Gabbana. What's explain that? And they think it's funny and they explain it to me. But none of them were offended by any of this. They were like, okay, he's making a joke. He's not trying to offend. He's making a joke. Like, didn't he order the flags half-mast for the Pope or something to that effect? And but the left, they'll do like Jesus Christ Superstar. What was the other one they did? Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. Then there were a couple of other productions, and then there were some exhibitions that were poking fun at like Catholicism or religious artifacts and things like that. The left never was offended over any of this, but it's only because Trump is, that's the only thing. They only because he's the thing that to them, he is the ingredient that can sour anything. They will immediately, if it's something they've been for their whole lives, they will immediately argue against it if he's involved. because that's how tribal people are. If they even have to, if the left has to agree with Trump on anything, they view that as they lost on that issue. And because they're that narrow-minded. Like, if you agree with someone on a particular issue and you have common ground, it doesn't mean you're giving anything up. It just means that, wow, both of you have the same thought on this issue. Not, you didn't change your position. They didn't change their position. You just have the same thought on an issue. But the left doesn't look at it that way. They look at it as if they're agreeing with someone who's across the aisle, then that nullifies their position. And they don't want to look like they're wrong or that they have been modified in any way. It is bizarre. They are a walking psychological study, the left is. They really are. So I don't know. I don't want to hear anybody get, I'm just tired of them complaining about Pope Trump, Trump Pope or whatever it is. A few other things, because there's POTUS is busy over the weekend. He said also they want to reopen Alcatraz. He said it's something that he thought, we have this audio. Can we play this? This is, audio soundbite, 1,005,011, 2014. Thank you, Steve.
Where did you get the idea for reopening Alcatraz?
Just an idea I've had, and I guess because the judges, so many of these radicalized judges, they want to have trials for every single, think of it, every single person that's in our country illegally, that came in illegally, that would mean millions of trials, and it's just so ridiculous what's happening. And it's long been a symbol, Alcatraz, of whatever it is. I mean, you know, it's a sad symbol, but it's a symbol of law and order. And, you know, it's got quite a history, frankly. Yeah. So I think we're going to do that. And we're looking
I'm not opposed to it. Are you opposed to it, Kane?
No.
I think it's kind of cool AF. Yeah. There's a lot of sharks in the waters, too. Super shark infested. I don't know if y'all knew that. Super shark infested. So he says he wants to open it up for some of the most ruthless, violent criminals. Is it, though? I heard it was, like, really... I watched about a year or so ago, because I love haunted history stuff, and I watched a haunted history thing about Alcatraz, and they were saying that it is in great disrepair. So I don't know what it would take to, like, make it work. I mean, does it really need to be that workable? I just think if you're a super violent criminal, the consequences, you're not going to the Ritz. You know what I'm saying? So do I care? Just does the security work? Are there shock fences?
Part of me makes me believe he's saying this because he's got a different motivation altogether.
What is your theory?
I don't know what the motivation is or what he wants to, but I think there's something that he wants to either do with that land, either sell it or something. But I don't know if the prison is really the end game here. I'm still a little suspicious.
I mean, wasn't it? Because I think part of the reasons that they couldn't even use it anymore was because it, I mean, even like the infrastructure, I'm talking like electricity, water, yeah. It was all really bad off. But again, you know, you do crime, you're not going to the Ritz. I am all for cruel and unusual punishment when it comes to rapists and pedophiles. So maybe that's something, you know.
Make punishment fit the crime.
Exactly. You know, that's what I look at. Our partners that help bring you the program, our friends over at All Family Pharmacy, they've got you covered. Whatever it is that you need. Is it any of the medications or therapeutics that the system tried to keep from you during lockdown? You know, things like ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine, which are so completely safe to take. I mean, they even allow pregnant women. They sometimes will suggest hydroxychloroquine for them. You know, because you can't rush through experimental injections and hand Pfizer multi-billion dollar paydays if you don't ban therapeutics. This is the thing. Like, they didn't just dismiss alternatives. They outright destroyed them. They wanted you to rely on the government and just listen to whatever they were ordering you to do. Well, things have changed. And there's All Family Pharmacy. All Family Pharmacy is your daily maintenance medications. They also have the ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, antibiotics, everything. Simple, fast, and affordable. No insurance, no problem. They got straightforward pricing, online ordering, shipping in just 2 to 4 days or overnight in a pinch if you need it. Everything is made in the USA. All of their medications are manufactured right here in the USA, ensuring high standards of quality and safety. Visit allfamilypharmacy.com/Dana for 10% off using promo code Dana10. Don't wait. Be prepared. Protect yourself and your family today. That's allfamilypharmacy.com/Dana. Use coupon code Dana10 to save 10%.
Get the lowdown on the latest news with a side of laughs whenever you want. Subscribe to the Dana Show podcast on YouTube, Apple, or wherever you get your podcast.
Like sands through the hourglass, so are the days of the United States.
Mayor says,
panic button that you'll immediately be able to hit that is going to alarm the police and is going to be connected directly to the local precincts. When you do the combination, it's going to give you access to the cameras in the store to see what is taking place and how we could get an immediate...
You know what's quicker than that? A gun? Yeah. A gun's faster than that. It takes an average of 20 minutes. In Manhattan, the average time for police response is insane as well. We have a lot more coming up. This and more coming up. Second hour. Don't go anywhere. Stick with us. Friends over at Preborn, a great organization that helps women who are at that crossroads. They're faced with an unplanned pregnancy. And we want women to choose life because we believe in the power of families. And we believe that women are a lot stronger than the left in this in our society gives them credit for. And so Preborn, they are they operate clinics in just the highest abortion cities across the nation, and they provide life-saving ultrasounds. They are the gospel leader of the pro-life movement. They saved over 67,000 babies last year, and they provide ultrasounds to mothers so that mothers can hear their infant's heartbeat. And when that happens, a mother who hears her baby's heartbeat, she's twice as likely to choose life. And your support makes that moment possible. $28. That's all it takes to provide one ultrasound. $140 can help save five babies. Your gift gives a mother the chance to hear her baby's heartbeat, and it gives the baby a chance to be heard in the only way that the baby can have sound, with their heartbeat. And so you are helping to save lives. Preborn has a 4-star charity rating, so you can give confidentially. And when you give monthly, they send you stories and pictures of the lives that you helped to save. Your generosity literally changes futures, families, generations, and helps to create legacies. Join Preborn in their mission to sponsor 1,000 life-saving ultrasounds before Mother's Day. Mother's Day is just this weekend. So just one heartbeat can change a life forever, and you can help. Give now at preborn.com/Dana, or you can donate by dialing #250 and say the word baby. Or give securely again, preborn.com/Dana, #250, say the word baby to help save lives.
He was fine, and where he is, he'll do a good job. I don't consider that. I didn't lose confidence in him. Why did I lose confidence? He's going to the United Nations represent. To me, I think it's personally, if I had a choice for myself of doing, I'd rather have that job than the other. He didn't resign. I just moved him. There's no resignation. You people are so bad. You're trying to make a big deal out of something. You are so bad. That's why nobody watches you anymore. Who are you with? Who are you with? You with who? First. I didn't know there was such a...
He's just like so just... I didn't even know there was a Hearst. What? He's just so dismissive. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here with you. We're at the top of the second hour. There is... He's talking about Mike Waltz. And he was talking with the press, a little, not a scrum, but like some of the press that's there on Air Force One. Good heavens. I almost said White Force One. I was thinking White House, Air Force, whatever. It's raining. I'm blaming that. Anyway, Dana Lash with you, top of this second hour now. And of course, you can listen across the country. A station near you, Channel 347 DirecTV, the chats at Rumble, YouTube, Facebook, all that good stuff. But he was saying, oh, you're making something out of nothing with Mike Waltz. Him getting the UN ambassador in some ways is a cushier, fancier thing than what he had prior. I mean, that's kind of my opinion on this. I think it's in some ways it's like way, it's a little cushier. But, I do think what this does, and we've talked about this before, is it highlights a divide in the Trump administration that they're going to have to fix. They all need to be on the same page as it relates to Iran. And there's a suspicion that one of the reasons Waltz was moved from this role to, I would say, more of a leashed role, rather, is at the UN, is because of Iran. Because he's one of those who, bomb Iran, right? That's, or Iran, like Lindsey Graham. Lindsey Graham always wanted to bomb Iran. But there's definitely a divide in the Trump administration on this. There was a very interesting, a good piece over at Washington Examiner. Trump needs his team on the same Iran page where they dive into this. specifically about Waltz. And it's not just Waltz. There's other people within the administration that are pretty absolutist on this stuff. Rubio's kind of in the middle of it. I think that he leans a certain way, but I don't think that he's showing his cards just yet. But the idea of being very, very aggressive and essentially getting us into a war with Iran, there are absolutely people in the administration that are leading that way. Trump is not. Trump is, he's not an isolationist, but what is the clear objective for getting into Iran? What, to stop them from uranium enrichment? They've been enriching uranium this entire time. And why is it our responsibility to send our blood and treasure to do it when the nuclearized Iran is a threat to the Saudis and the Arab League? Why can't the Arab League do it? Why is it the United States' responsibility to wipe the backside of the rest of the world with our blood and treasure every single time? I'm sorry, but I don't really care about the lives of anyone over in the Middle East as it is worth anybody here in the United States. I would not spend one American soldier's life for that of anybody that is not a United States citizen, that we do not have our interests completely outlined and articulated. Might be harsh, but that, you know what? The onus is on the shoulders of the people who are trying to make the case to get involved in this conflict. What do they think is going to happen if we start striking Iran? The Houthis are one thing. That's why Iran always uses these proxy groups like, you know, Hezbollah or the Houthis or all of the other million different little factions of warlords that they have. So there's, and Steve Witkoff's in the middle of it. And everybody's fighting. They're really fighting over Iran, and it's starting to now be a distraction. And it's, I feel like each side is all one way, and there's no middle ground or anything. Trump is, for his part, Trump is definitely not, he's not on the same page that Waltz is, or some of these others are. And I don't think he's ever going to be prevailed upon to move to that position. He is very clear that, no, we're not going to. And he'll talk about striking the Houthis, but that's very, very different as opposed to carrying out strikes like against Tehran, right? Very different. But he's threatened to impose secondary sanctions on any country that buys Iranian crude. And that's, I mean, that's, I think, way more of a rational, reasoned response than maybe what Waltz was kind of promoting. But they're supposed to, they had a fourth round of discussions that were supposed to happen last weekend, but Oman canceled them. And so we'll see. But this, it does highlight the split. Dialogue versus detonation is how Axios puts it and how they're going to try to manage this threat. And I see these little hit pieces going out, too. Here's another thing that I would like to, that I think that his administration needs to be cautioned about. So in the Trump administration, one of the tools that, and I don't think Trump does this. I do think his surrogates do. I know for a fact his surrogates do. They will shop, not even credible oppo, but they'll shop hit pieces on other people in the administration if they're off this, if they're off page. They're not on the same page. Like I saw a piece, I don't know if it was the Daily Mail, that said, oh, Mike Waltz was, you know, he would, the reason that he was removed from this position by POTUS is because he was trying to coordinate with Israel to go after Iran. And that seems to be a pretty high and mighty BS take. But somebody shopped it. Somebody put that out there. And the press will eat it up. I don't want to see leaks start happening again this term like they did his first term. Because they were distracting and it just dragged him all over the place. And he, I mean, it wasn't until after, you know, we had a rough midterms that he had to just focus on judicial the second half of his first term. So, I mean, he's, I think he's listened to everybody make their arguments, but he's clearly not moving on Iran. It's not happening. I think they had a sit room meeting this morning on Iran. And there's, I mean, you have people like, I think Vance is in, Vance is more in line with Trump in that he wants a diplomatic resolution and still thinks that that's possible. You have Witkoff, who sort of, you know, goes back, flits back and forth, but otherwise stays kind of in the center. And then you have Waltz. Rubio is leaning more towards the Waltz side, I would say, and Lindsey Graham and Tom Cotton, which are, they're very, very aggressive towards Iran. And they think that Iran's weaker than ever. We shouldn't compromise. They either dismantle their nuclear program entirely or we strike them. That's kind of that camp's proposal. And obviously you have Vance and others, including POTUS, that are like, no, I think the diplomatic solution, because that's a big commitment. I mean, you're committing to war. And the United States is not in a place to do it. Everyone keeps talking about recruitment. We're not there with recruitment. Hell, we don't even have all the baddies weeded out at DOD and Pentagon yet before we're going to start embroiling ourselves in a conflict. And I want you to think of this. This conflict isn't going to just be limited to Trump's term. If you would have Waltz and you would have Rubio even and Graham and Cotton, if they all got their ways and we issue the ultimatum, you either deconstruct your nuclear program or we're going to strike. Guess what? That conflict will outlast Trump's term. And then you will depending on what Republicans do, if we're getting involved in a conflict and we don't have any permanent tax cuts or anything else, guess what? You're going to have a Democrat president in 2028. Are you looking forward to having a bunch of things that Trump did to strengthen the military, but it was only done by EO, immediately reversed by that same pen and paper by a Democrat president? Because that's exactly what's going to happen. And then all of these men and women who signed up to serve our country under Trump and under SecDef Hegseth, they're going to have the rug ripped out underneath them and they're going to be shoved into a meat cannon. That's exactly what's going to happen under a Democrat administration. So everybody needs to get their asses and wits about them right now. This is ridiculous. There's two camps. And I will say the people who are all excited for war, they couldn't bust a grape in a fruit fight. All these people that are so excited about miring our country down into another conflict, these neocons, and that is the correct way to use that term, they are nation-building neocons. They are entirely ignorant of the fact that some cultures don't want democracy. Some don't want democratic processes in a republic because they don't want a republic. And you have to modify how you deal with them accordingly. You can't apply the same kind of sanitized Western view to every single nation on God's green earth. It's just impractical and unworkable. And these people that want to get involved, they think that everything, they're the hammer and everything's a nail. They have no idea. No idea. Not a single one of them. There was a 45-minute conversation last weekend between Witkoff and the foreign minister of Iran. And that was, I think, since the Obama administration, the highest level of discourse. But they want a nuclear deal. Iran has a two-month deadline. Yeah, they have a two-month grace period before the deadline to sign it. And they're trying to get this wrapped up. And it doesn't help that you have some neocons in the administration that are very loudly banging war drums. So when it comes down to it, Waltz's removal had nothing to do with signal. I think it was the administration reshifting people, shifting them around to further underscore Trump's position on Iran and not the neocon position on Iran. That's what it comes down to. So, by the way, Lorraine was, because Trump in that audio soundbite, it was like Hearst. I never heard of Hearst either. Lorraine's got it. She's like, yeah, they own a bunch of magazines, television channels, television stations, including the San Francisco Chronicle. Well, that makes sense because Hearst was California based. But they also owned Esquire. I didn't know that. And they own 50% of the A&E cable network. Did you know that, Kane?
I did not.
20% of Disney Company's sports division, ESPN. Uh-huh. I didn't know that. Hearst Publications. So we're going to talk to Stephen Yates about that a little bit more coming up as well. That divide that we see in the administration with a few other things. Also coming up, we got some cultural stuff. Apparently, Gen Z is whining about Starbucks. I don't know. I don't know why. Our partners that help bring you the program, our friends over at Super Beats. You guys are familiar with the Super Beats, folks, the Super Beats hard chews. Well, now they have the Super Barine, and it's available at the Sam's Club. And your metabolism affects everything. You can support it with Super Barine. It's $5 off at Sam's Club through April 29th. It's just $24.98. It's plant-based, doctor-formulated. It has a unique form of berberine and Italian olive fruit extracts. You get additional antioxidant and cardiovascular support. It's a unique berberine. They clinically studied it, and it delivers nearly 10 times higher absorption than standard berberine. So that means you only have to take one capsule a day. It's highly concentrated, easy to swallow. And if you're worried about GI distress, it includes grapeseed extract for greater tolerability. Visit Sam's Club to restock your heart health support with Super Beats Heart Chews and expand your routine with the new Super Berberine for healthy metabolism and blood sugar support. And don't forget, Super Berberine is $5 off at Sam's Club through April 29th. Snag this offer at Sam's Club while it lasts. Start today and get on the road to better cardiovascular health support.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So as you all know, Sovereignty won over journalism at the Kentucky Derby. That was pretty crazy. I love the name. I love the symbolism that it has. It's just so perfect. Bodies of animals everywhere. Toxic algae bloom is taking a toll on Southern California's marine life. Doesn't this happen in the Gulf too? Because I remember reading about some of this stuff. They said that it's like poisonous. They're talking about sea lions and some animals, I don't even know, like all kinds of stuff. Toxic fish, and it's this algae bloom that, you know, happens every now and then, not just, you know, near California, but in the Gulf as well. The rise of single parents. This is an interesting piece that Kane marked, because I think it's Financial Times, and I think there's a lot that goes into it than just, you know, like economics or like various life choices. You think that there's an inability of people to connect with people. I think that that's true.
Yeah.
Because they get into that with this story. People who like work, and then they don't really like, I think a lot of it is driven by, you know, digital life, digital socialization. People aren't connecting the way that they used to. And I don't think that that's like specifically the younger generations as well. I've been hearing stories like older generations now too, like even boomers are starting to deal with some of this stuff where people are just like, they want to just stay home and they'll connect digitally, or they'll just, you know, it's just very interesting. But that's also leading to more and more people choosing to not have like the traditional nuclear family. They just like, you know, single parents is like the thing to, it's like the thing to do. I don't know. There's a lot that goes, this is bigger than just a quick five. This is interesting. A 12-year-old boy in New Zealand creates an AI pill bot to stop his grandmother from taking the wrong medication. This was so sweet. Little 12-year-old boy, Gabriel Anthony, he invented a robot and it programmed it via AI to help his grandmother. He calls it Pillbot. He says she has poor eyesight. She takes a lot of pills because of her conditions, and sometimes because she can't really recognize the pill and see it, she'll take the wrong one. So he has Pillbot, and it recognizes what medications she needs and which ones, you know, she has to have a flashlight and a magnifying glass to identify pills. So he said that it actually takes a photo of the pill, it recognizes the pill based on its training, and it checks her pills before she takes them. That is amazing, and he needs to get an award for that, because I love that so much. That's how you properly young people use digital and have those advancements. Awesome. If you don't have real ID, you're going to have a lot of travel headaches after May 7th. The real ID. Isn't that just, I go back and forth on this. Isn't it just a way to like coalesce everything federally?
I think so.
That's what I think. I don't know. We've got a lot more on the way. Stick with us. More in store. Partners that help bring you the program. It's our friends over at Byrna Gun. It's a great thing to have a diverse weapons array, and this is what Byrna offers you. Because, you know, you'll carry blades and you'll carry different calibers. Not everybody has the luxury, by the way, of being able to live and work where you can take your firearm with you all the time. I have some very pro 2A friends that live in DC and New York, and they're not able, they have one of those difficult to carry license, one of the difficult license to carries, and they still are barred from carrying like pretty much everywhere. They went out and got a Byrna gun. Now, there's a couple of different kinds. They have rifles and all of that, but I think for the purpose of self-defense, you need to check out the SD or the new Byrna CL, that's the compact launcher. This is very similar, actually, to my 43X in terms of size and slimness. It's, you know, almost 7 inches long. It's about cell phone length, you know. It's compact. And it's, if you know the Byrna gun, they shoot chemical irritant projectiles that can deter threats from up to 50 feet away. So it gives you a chance when municipal and private property restrictions are trying to disarm you, right? You still have some way of protecting yourself. And this is, you know, it's 15 round shot capacity per cartridge. and everything is made right here in the US of A. It has a red dot. There's no recoil, and it's powered by 8 Gs of CO2. So again, 15 round shot capacity per cartridge. Now, if you order before May 11th, you can get the Mother's Day promotion. You can get a free 95 count. You got these projectiles that you can buy with it. Take it along with your purchase. That's a $49.99 value. But it gives you the legal flexibility because, as you know, it doesn't care about gun-free zone signs. It doesn't require background checks, no waiting periods, no permits, so it's accessible to everybody. Visit Byrna.com/Dana. Check out the new Byrna CL, BYRNA.com/Dana. Order by May 11th for your free projectile kit to go along with it. That's a $49.99 value. Byrna.com/Dana.
Keep your finger on the pulse with the Dana Show podcast, delivering timely news with insightful analysis whenever you want, straight to you on YouTube, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I know that you are only 100 days in, but as we sit here today, who do you see as your successor, Mr. President?
Well, it's far too early to say that, but I do have a vice president, and typically it would be, and J.D.'s doing a fantastic job.
He would be at the top of the list?
It could very well be. I don't want to get involved in that. I think he's a fantastic, brilliant guy. Marco is great. There's a lot of them that are great. I also see tremendous unity, but certainly you would say that somebody's the VP. If that person is outstanding, I guess that person would have an advantage. But I think the other people would all stay in unbelievably high positions. But, it could be that he'd be challenged by somebody. We have a lot of good people in this party.
He isn't claiming an heir, by the way. And I know that the media is trying to run that as another way to divide, but he's not claiming an heir, an H-E-I-R, right? He's not saying he's just saying, look, it's too early. Obviously, the VP, et cetera. That's Trump talking to Kristen Welker. Welcome back, bottom of the second hour. Although I entirely reject Marco Rubio. Entirely. A million, with all my heart, reject him. I have a very personal view of it. And my view is I was there in person, and it was the Parkland Town Hall. And he was there. I was there. I was speaking after him. And that's that infamous town hall. And he was on stage in the crowd. Remember, leading up to this, just to give you some insight, leading up to this, they had Robert Runcie, who was the superintendent of the school, Ted Deutsch, who called me a quote-unquote bitch, screamed it at me when I was on stage. And he was sitting right next to my husband, and my husband had to say a prayer that he didn't punch him in the face. Screaming at me. And he got up on stage, and they riled up that whole arena like a rally. You thought the Wellstone funeral was in poor taste when Democrats used that Paul Wellstone funeral to rally? Remember that whole thing came back in the day? Mm-hmm. This was like worse because they were exploiting a mass tragedy. Nobody talked about how much worse it was what Democrats did at that Parkland Town Hall. They went out there and they gave campaign speeches, and they were railing against Republicans. They were railing against gun owners. They called gun owners terrorists. This was before the CNN cameras started rolling. I was listening to all of this. And it was me and my husband backstage. And as part of my job at that time, I had to represent firearm owners. And it wasn't a choice. And when the cameras started rolling, they didn't tell everybody that, oh, well, we had all these politicians go up and make all these speeches. And so everybody's like, just ready to rip out. They were ready to like hump air. They were ready to just, ooh. It was like a 5 minute tape. And I can't remember. I think he was up there with Deutsch. And Rubio was up there, and everybody got a chance to speak. And they were screaming at Rubio. They were booing him, cussing him. It was bad. And they were saying, well, what about red flag laws? And what about universal background checks? And I watched the mob bully him away from the Second Amendment live on stage. I watched him with my own eyes on live television. I was there. I watched him give them everything that they wanted. He agreed live on stage to red flag laws and universal background checks. That's not an exaggeration. He agreed to it, and then they cheered him. And my heart fell into my stomach because I still had to go up after him. And my husband turned around and looked at me and he said, your job just got that much harder. And I'm like, gulp. I know. And I had to go up there and I didn't give an inch. And after that, my view of him changed dramatically. And because of that, he's good in this role, but he's a subordinate. Because of that, I could never, ever, ever endorse him. I watched him sacrifice all of our rights and our self-defense because he bent both knees and bowed his head to the mob. Because it was convenient and easy for him to do. Now, I know everybody, the trend is to cheer him and applaud him. And I think he's doing a fine job as Secretary of State. He is a subordinate. I think when push comes to shove, I think he cracks under serious pressure. I watched it happen. I had a view that no other American in this country had. And ever since then, I was very critical of him. He will not have anything to do with me. His people will not have anything to do with me. And I wasn't mean. I wasn't harsh. I just said I've never been more disappointed in a lawmaker in my life than I was with him at that moment. The moment that his country needed him the most. The moment that gun owners, that Americans who want to make sure that they're safe, wanted, that needed him the most, he capitulated. And you can't crack. If you're going for the highest office in the land, you cannot crack. And he did. So he can never be the heir. I'm not going to get into some of the moderate part of his record that's not very MAGA. But on that reason alone, that was more than just he failed on an issue. That was a test of character. And it was a test of personal strength. And he failed. Now, I think he is in his element that he was born to be in as Secretary of State. He's a surrogate, though. He takes his orders from the administration. And I think he's fine there. But I will not apologize to anyone for my position on this because no one else was there as I was, right there on the side of the stage watching it. So no grifter can hold a candle to that real, actual experience. So no, he can never be heir. He could, and I would never support it. I would not support it. I couldn't vote for it because I've seen it. I mean, when you crack like that, it's no different than a Democrat. Now, I think it was interesting what Trump said about Vance. He said, well, you know, he said he's very brilliant, but if you notice, he said it in two or three different ways. It's early. He wants to just see, you know, and I think that's completely fine. I mean, for crying out loud, the man's not even been back in the White House for 100 days and you're already like trying to push him out the door. Okay, who's your successor? Who's your successor? Give him a minute to do some stuff, okay? But that's the press. You had to know that that question was coming. I thought he handled it fine. I thought the way that the media is trying to present it, they're trying to make it divisive. They're saying, oh, look, he already named two people right here. Oh, these are his heirs. That's not what he said. He said there's a lot of good people. And I know because it's going to be brought up, some people are like, well, why didn't he mention DeSantis? He didn't exclude him. He just mentioned his VP, which is natural. And then the guy who literally is in the press because he assumed a million different temporary positions in addition to Secretary of State right now until they can get these other roles filled. So, yeah, he's right there all the time. That's not unusual. I get it. So I think that the way Trump handled that answer was completely fine. There was nothing. There's no drama there. He didn't exclude anybody. And he said it's too early. And he said potential. He never claimed anything. So don't get baited by the press into thinking that Trump said something that he did not. Kane, you heard the same thing, correct?
Yes, ma'am.
Didn't he say it like three different times? He kept it like he purposefully was trying to keep it as open as possible.
Yep.
And it's still not going to be good enough for the press. Nope. They're still going to try to find some way to divide. Don't buy into that nonsense. I thought it was completely fine the way he did it. And honestly, I got to tell you, I think the Signalgate thing and the way that, you know, he was handling Mike Waltz, especially if this comes down to reshifting things as it pertains to Iran, that was a very smooth move. Don't you think so, Kane?
Oh, yeah.
Because he didn't get removed. He didn't get removed because of Signalgate. It's because of Iran, because of his position on Iran. That's why he got moved. So, you know, this is just the way it is. All right, a couple of things, because we have time for some Red State Rhinos. Juan, I just got a couple of things here. So serious, isn't it? It's like Red State Rhino Hunting Noir. So, a couple of things. They are considering, you know, obviously several different bits of legislation. They have a Reader Act, which is being proposed. This is coming from Kristen Bentley, who is a committee woman in the first Senate district. And SB3, it's a fix to the Reader Act for Texas. Now, you know, we focus on rhinos, obviously, for this Red State Rhino Hunting. And I'm not ignoring other states, and there are other states that we're going to get to, but we focus on put a particular emphasis on Texas and Florida because they are the biggest red states, and you can't lose them. You particularly can't lose Texas. So SB13, they're looking at requiring consistent review procedures and basically giving and also making it to where parents have to sign off on non-academic materials that are presented in schools. Like elementary as well, so that we can get rid of the age inappropriate sexual material that is constantly being introduced in school. That's, you know, ultimately gets into all, I mean, the trans stuff and all this other stuff that's in these schools. And there are, of course, you know, some. It's in the Public Education Committee. It's SB13, and there are some. Nobody's affixed their name yet, but there are some lawmakers that are trying to push back against this that are Republicans, of all the things. It's kind of amazing that this is something that just consistently keeps happening. Now, in Florida, I can't even believe I'm about to say this, they actually had a big win in Florida because their speaker, Danny Perez, finally was forced to yield on property taxes. So you remember the Florida House Speaker, a big rhino, who was fighting forever against any kind of property tax relief for Floridians. He said it was impractical. He's lost the battle. And so now the Select Committee on Property Taxes, they are now allowed, they're looking at proposals to overhaul the entire property tax structure for the state of Florida. One of the things that the governor had said is that they require homeowners, you're constantly paying rent. Constitutional protections for Florida homeowners require the approval of voters. In 26, Floridians need relief. So they're pushing, they're exploring everything from like a $1,000 rebate, whatever it is, until they can get until the committee can formulate a permanent structure. They overhaul it and then they can get it passed in the legislature. They had been blocked by the Republican Speaker of the House for forever. And now he lost this battle. And so now it's going forward. So that is a huge, huge thing. And that goes to a lot of grassroots people in Florida who started hearing about this. And they started burning down his phone lines. And when he started seeing the pushback from Floridians in that state, his knees buckled. So you have the power to do this. You just got to do it. And you got to get your friends and your family to do it. Because it doesn't matter how powerful the Speaker of the House is in a particular state, they're never going to be as powerful as you are. When you bring that heat the way that these people have been bringing on him, you can get it done. So that's a big win. So now they're pushing forward in all of that. As we move, our partners that bring you the program, our friends over at Kel-Tec, great company, great all-American company. They got the PR-57, the rotary barrel pistol, the lightest 5.7 on the market, 40% lighter than competition. It's perfect for concealed carry. You can actually really concealed carry this 5.7. It's awesome. Unique top loading design replaces the traditional magazines with stripper clips for a slimmer carry profile in a 20+1 capacity. MSRP is only $399. It's super sweet. This is one you absolutely have to have. And you know, Kel-Tec, it's all about made in America. Family owned values at their best. These are American materials, American workers, American labor, American production, the whole nine yards. America needs more companies like Kel-Tec. Learn more at KelTecWeapons.com. Innovation, performance, Kel-Tec, KelTecWeapons.com. Tell them Dana sent you.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
Wow. Oh my gosh, this is crazy. A Florida homeowner, because you know iguanas are invasive species in Florida. That's what they're considered. A Florida homeowner found 98 iguana eggs in their backyard. Oh, and when they called the Humane Iguana Control Division of Florida Fish and Wildlife, they said that that was literally the most they had ever seen in one site. And it was from, I think they said, three different females that they, because they, I mean, they tell people to hunt these things. Three female iguanas had nested in burrows. They were all interconnected and each had their own clutch. And they said it's a record, the most ever they've never found in the history of the state. And they said iguanas are more than a nuisance. They dig burrows. It damages infrastructure, landscape destruction, health risks. You know, they can, like, the salmonella on the skin, all that stuff. They said that one even compromised an actual dam before. And it was a $2 million. They had $2 million of taxpayer money to fix it. Isn't that crazy? So that's a Florida man was arrested because he had three different wives in three different counties. And that is a big, bad no-no. Ew. Did we have this before? I think we had this one. Yeah, this. I think I had this one last Friday. So yeah, we don't need that one again. Also, let's see here. I had another one. This couple. Hang on. I don't want to read that one's gross. I'm not reading that one. A Florida man was accused of ramming into a Boca Raton fire engine. Apparently, he was triggered. I've never seen a guy with such a large forehead in my life. It was a roadside outburst. It landed him in handcuffs. He yelled at firefighters, hit their fire engine, and sped off. And there was a call later on into police that said a vehicle was forcing other cars off the road. And they got this guy, 40-year-old Christian D'Orsini, and he was screaming at firefighters. That's when he backed into a fire engine, tried to speed off. They did catch him, and he had a DUI. Left the scene of an accident, property damage, all kinds of stuff. So he was under some kind of influence per CBS 12. Yeah, I would say so. And I'm not going to have time for this one. Tomorrow I'll tell you about the one who assaulted a gate agent at DFW, which you can't do. So we got a lot more on the way. Third hour next. Stick with us. Literally the only Christian conservative cell phone provider out there. And it's Patriot Mobile. So, like, if you're upset that people spend money on Netflix or Amazon, you're going to get madder that you're spending more of your money on a cell phone service that donates to, like, gun control and DEI and CRT and all this nonsense. Patriot Mobile has affordable plans for everybody. That's great. Everybody wants to save money in this economy. But they also have great nationwide coverage. They operate on all three major networks. You're connected wherever you go. You support what you believe in. This is all about better coverage and more choice in terms of what causes you support, what causes matter to you, because your money isn't working against you at the ballot box. Like, for instance, they helped empower. They worked with grassroots parents in our town when they were fighting. We're all fighting to take back our school board from people who, I can't even tell you some of the stuff that they wanted to teach in the classrooms because we have decency rules for airwaves. But that being said, They empowered the parents to be successful in taking back the school board here. And they work with people all over the country, in addition to providing top-notch cell phone service, seamless switching, 100% based U.S. customer service team. Keep your number, your phone, however you want, or upgrade. It's never been easier to switch. So visit PatriotMobile.com/Dana or call 972-PATRIOT and get a free month of service using promo code Dana. Make the switch today and defend freedom with every call and text you make. PatriotMobile.com/Dana, 972-PATRIOT.
Did you decide to reopen Alcatraz? Can you walk us through that decision?
Did I say what?
To reopen Alcatraz. How will you use it? How did you come up with the idea?
Well, I guess I was supposed to be a movie maker. We started with the movie making and we'll end. I mean, it represents something very strong, very powerful in terms of law and order. Our country needs law and order. Alcatraz is, I would say, the ultimate, right? Alcatraz, Sing Sing and Alcatraz, the movies. But it's right now a museum, believe it or not. A lot of people go there. It housed the most violent criminals in the world, and nobody ever escaped. One person almost got there, but they, as you know the story, they found his clothing rather badly ripped up, and it was a lot of shark bites, a lot of problems. Nobody's ever escaped from Alcatraz, and just represented something strong having to do with law and order. We need law and order in this country. And so we're going to look at it. Some of the people up here are going to be working very hard on that. And we had a little conversation. I think it's going to
be the shark bites. A lot of shark. Well, it's shark infested water right there. I mean, I'm just saying it is, isn't it, Kane? I mean, you know, the sharks are hungry right there. That's all they got are needles and feces on the.
That's where they're looking to get their bites in.
You got to get your bites in, and then their little watch goes off and says you did it. I don't know what's happening. So, oh, my gosh. Welcome back to the program. We're at the top of this third hour. It's the weather. It's welcome back. Dana Lash with you. We're at the top, again, top of the third hour. Greetings and salutations. A little quick sidebar. So, you know, our studio, we have Wick here, a rescue pup. And this dog is, we've had to teach him how to be a dog. In a way, because we got him from a shelter and he never like went outside without a person before. So the first time I let him go outside, you know, like go out, it's your backyard, you know, and you can go use the restroom. He looked at me like I was crazy. Like, get here, woman. Like, you got to walk out with me. I can't do this by myself. And he is petrified of storms. He just shakes. He just tucks his tail and just shakes whenever there's like thunder, whenever it's storming. And then, you know, if whatever was going on, we got to stop it and make sure he's chill. And he doesn't like being in his kennel except to go to bed at night. That's the only time. And most dogs want a safe space. Wick does not want to be in his kennel. So, I've made a pillow fort for him. Like a whole pillow fort that he can get in and hide. So I'll let you know how that works out. I'm like, well, he doesn't want to be in his kennel. So the next best thing is a pillow fort.
Wait, how many pillows have you used in this pillow fort?
A lot. And there's like a blanket, and I am an expert pillow fort builder. I don't know if anybody knows this. It's a particular skill set that I have. You know, I've made many, many pillow forts, not just as a child, but also as a boy mom. I have made some pillow forts in my time. And so it's a really, Kane, it's a spectacular pillow fort.
Yeah.
In which Wick can find security from the storm, since he doesn't.
Does he calm down in the pillow fort?
Well, I don't know. We're trying it for the first time. So we're going to see. That's what I did on break. I'm like, I went and cobbled together, if I do say so myself, a pretty spectacular pillow fort. And we're going to see if that maybe, because he wants to be under stuff and if he sits by you when it's storming, you have to basically hug him. You have to put your arm around him and hug him. Or he'll try to melt into your head. It's just like he tries to get right there by you.
That poor guy.
And someone was telling me a thunder shirt. People who have never dressed toddlers are like, get a thunder shirt for your dog. Dressing a dog is as bad, if not worse sometimes, I think, than dressing a toddler. Well, unless it was my youngest. And I just don't know if that's going to work out. So I don't even know what it's a shirt that hugs you tight.
Yeah, I guess it's supposed to be like those compression blankets that make you feel like you're being hugged.
I feel like that's not going to work for him. He's a very smart dog. He is super smart. He learned how to open gates and all kinds of stuff. He's incredibly smart. Except he doesn't recognize just a basic storm. He's smart, but you know. So we'll see how that goes. So
he's no meteorologist. Give him a break.
Well, I mean, it is kind of out of nowhere. It was, you know, sunny this morning, and then all of a sudden a storm comes rolling through again, and the thunder is so loud that sometimes it carries over air. It's crazy. So anyway, that's my life right now. I'm just making sure my dog doesn't have an existential breakdown when I'm on air because of the thunder. So if one day you guys happen to tune in, and you hear like some whining in the background of the mic if you're not watching, or if you just see a giant yellow dog here in the seat with me, it's because the pillow fort didn't work. It didn't work. And so he's got to be, and he just sits there. It's the funniest thing. He doesn't move. It's like he thinks if he's still, the storm won't see him. Like the big roll of thunder. He acts like if he's just super still, the storm won't see him. And he sits as still as a cigar store Indian. He just sits there and will not move. So he'll just, he'll probably look like a fake dog. So it may happen now. It may happen here in the next few. So bear with us. It's our high maintenance show dog. Oh my gosh. Now, Lorraine says for her dog, it's the electricity in the air more so than the thunder. I didn't even think about that. Really? The electricity in the air? I just think it's muggy. Ooh. Anyway, so. All right. So POTUS having a little press avail right there, and he's discussing Alcatraz. I just, again, I don't think you need to make it all up, right? Just make sure you got the electric fences work, and I think you're good, right? Don't you think so? And the locks work?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that. Yeah, I think that'll. I don't even know how much that would. Are we running out of prison space?
I don't know.
I mean, we've been letting prisoners out for all kinds of different reasons.
Right.
And overpopulation's been one of those reasons.
Yeah,
so.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, maybe it, you know, maybe we do, but I'm not against it. I'm not against it. POTUS sat down with Kristen Welker and was grilling him about a number of different issues. Can we have audio soundbite 6? Because I need to hear what he says about Jasmine Crockett. Go ahead and play this one.
I can't name one Democrat. I mean, I look at the Democrats, they're in total disarray. They have a new person named Crockett. I watched her speak the other day. She's definitely a low IQ person. And they said she's the future of the party.
She's dumb. How is that possible? That's what he just said. Now, speaking of Crockett, was this at her audio soundbite? I think this, 17. So she was speaking at a commencement ceremony, you know. This sounds like a particular, just like, a, I guess, what a regular commencement material. Listen to this.
There are going to be people that tell you that you don't belong. And I am here to tell you over and over and over that you absolutely belong. There are people that are going to tell you that there is not a table in which there is a seat for you. But I am here to remind you of Montgomery and those folding chairs. Let me tell you that we know how to use a chair. Whether we pulling it up or we doing something else with it.
Okay, so what? I guess she thinks that. So this was her graduation, her commencement speech Sunday. She was in Mississippi. 20-minute speech. And she's like unnecessarily wordy. Like instead of, you know, at a table in which there is a chair, you could just say a seat at the table, you know. At a table, and using a bunch of words strung together poorly does not make you sound smarter. It makes you sound dumb. Just say a seat at the table. That's it. But she's talking about this, the fight that, when she's talking about chairs, do you remember this 2023 fight that was in Montgomery, Alabama? And it was boaters that fought with, I guess, like a dock worker and a couple of other people. Remember this? It was a bunch of drunk people that fought, and then there were chairs involved. I don't even know. And it had to do with a parking spot at the dock. Like, somebody was trying to dock their boat, and somebody else, there was like a large river boat, and then there was a smaller private boat. And everybody got into a fight, and everybody made it a racial thing. And because they said, well, the city has a history of racial violence. I don't know if it was a race thing more as much as it was a drunk people entitled thing. I don't know. But, I mean, I guess, you know, she needed it to be that. She referenced that. That's what she was talking about with the folding chair. Like, that doesn't even make sense. You're talking about a drunk fight over over dock space and a... What? But why is that the message? First off, who's telling people that that there isn't a seat for them at the table? Oh, sorry. A table at which there's a seat, also known as a chair, that you could have the seat at. I don't get it, Kane. Like, what? Why is that who's telling anybody this? The only people that are saying this are people like her. The only people that are going, oh, there's no room at the table. It's just, it's her. She's the one who's telling them this. But that.
She did respond to him on X.
I
put that in Slack.
She did respond to him on X.
Yeah.
Well, her remarks were stupid when she's talking about the chair. But she said, She tweeted, as Kane noted, she tweeted, quote, oh gosh, for you to be in charge of the whole country, you sure do have my name in your mouth a lot. Okay, first off, let's stop with the first sentence. He doesn't even know your name. He just knew your last name. And he only mentioned you one time. So get over yourself. And can we stop saying name in your mouth? Like, that's so stupid. Just shut up. I'm so tired of people trying to sound hard ass and like, I'm going to say something that I think other hard ass people say. And if I say it, then I'm going to borrow the hard assedness. Just stop. And then she goes, every time you say my name, you're reminding the world that you're terrified of smart, bold black women telling the truth and holding you accountable. Like, what? Like, he mentioned you one time. He mentioned her one time. Like, he wig snatched you. And why are you still talking? Like, stop. He didn't even mention your whole name. So she snatched her own wig at her speech. Like, I've never seen anybody wigs like do a self wig snatch, an SWS, harder than this woman does. Like, it just does not. Keep my name out of your mouth. Okay, that's not even how that works, but okay. Just, I feel like I'm watching like Schitt's Creek, the show. Fold in the cheese, David. Well, what does it even mean? I just fold it in. Keep my name out of your mouth. What does that even mean?
The funny thing is that every time she talks about it, it's proving his point.
Well, yeah. I mean, she talks about him all the time. He just referenced her one time. One time. He just mentioned her one time. And she loses it on X. Loses it. She was so excited that he even mentioned her last name. Nobody remembers her first name. And the only reason that they remember her last name is because it's Davy Crockett's name first. And it's a little bit jarring to realize that somebody with the last name Crockett is such an idiot and so entitled. I mean, she's literally like a trust fund socialist. I told you she grew up in the ritziest area in St. Louis, and she went to the most expensive and exclusive private school ever. I mean, MICDS is, that's where all the politicians' kids went, all the CEOs' kids went, all the debutantes, all the billionaires and the millionaires' kids, all the ballplayers' kids were at MICDS. Like, everybody was at, if you had money and you had, your parents were famous, you were at MICDS. That was like the school. And it's super expensive. It's like more expensive than a four-year university. It is insanely expensive to go there. Beautiful campus, but I had to do a profile. One of my first jobs after college was writing a celebrity profile on a performing artist, and they went to MICDS. And when I walked into that school, I was blown away because it was like a world away from how I grew up. I think she tries to cosplay like she's Hood. Well, she does. She tries to cosplay Hood. And she's not. Like, AOC tries to cosplay like she's tough. It's like, stop. It just looks so bad. It's so bad. So, that was her commencement address. I just can't believe that you would reference drunk people fighting with folding chairs over dock space at a commencement address and then act like that's somehow representative of racial struggle. I mean, it doesn't even make any sense. And she was in Mississippi, right? And she's referencing something that was in Montgomery, Alabama. I don't understand. None of that makes sense to me. Of course, you know, not the brightest bulb in the box. Not really. Audio Sumbit 18. Oh, she kept going. Listen, this is nuts. It's easy to play because she says stuff that's so crazy. Oh, wait, we got to move, don't we? Oh, hold that thought. Sorry, yeah, Steve is dying. Steve, you got to yell at me. We got to move because Steve will have a stroke and we won't have any quick five. Gold Co. is making it easy to take that first step toward protecting your savings. Just fill out a quick form, no commitment, just free information. And then they'll ship you your free 2025 gold and silver kit straight to your door. No shipping fees, no strings, just a free info kit to help you understand how gold and silver can fit into your financial plan. I'm a big believer in doing your research, and this kit is a great place to start. So I'm really excited to be partnering with Gold Co. because not only do they support my show, which I truly appreciate, but they've made the whole process of buying precious metals super straightforward. Because if you're a fan of the show, Gold Co. is also going to tell you how to qualify for unlimited free bonus silver on eligible orders. If you qualify, you can even get a free half-ounce silver Ronald Reagan coin, totally free. Don't wait. Take that first step towards protecting and diversifying your savings with Gold Co. Visit DanaLikesGold.com to learn more. That's DanaLikesGold.com.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So NIH closes experimentation labs that are accused of brutally killing thousands of beagles for over 40 years. It's so horrible. It was announced that they closed their last in-house beagle lab on the NIH campus. This comes after days after DOJ said that they're investigating these experiments in the White Coast Waste Project. So that's great news. Let's see. Also, solar panels to be fitted on all new homes in England by 2027. That's mandatory. You will be forced to comply. Stephen Yates joins us next. Look, your house is your absolute biggest asset. Why in the world you wouldn't have it locked down? I don't know. I mean, you lock your car up and you make sure that, you know, your car is protected. You make sure that, you know, if you own a business, your business is protected. I mean, your money in a bank is protected. But what about your home? The problem in today's AI-driven cyber world is that it's easier and more prevalent than ever to just swindle somebody out of a home title, steal it outright. Your equity is the target. They can forge your signature on a document. It's easy to get a fake notary stamp. They pay a little fee with your county, and then your home title's been transferred out of your name. It's as easy as that. One forged signature is all it takes. The sad thing is that most people don't even know that it's happened. They don't know that it's happened until they start getting foreclosure notices because they're using your equity, the scammers, to take out massive loans. Some of them, there are even stories of people who've had their property sold out from underneath them outright. And you are left to deal with the very expensive aftermath. Most people can't afford to litigate it and protect. They can't. After it's done, most people can't afford to protect themselves. It's that bad. This is why you need Home Title Lock. Home Title Lock can protect you. Use HomeTitleLock.com. You can get a free title history report and a 14-day trial of their $1 million triple lock protection. So that's 24/7 monitoring of your title, urgent alerts to any changes. And if fraud should happen, they'll spend up to $1 million to fix it. So visit HomeTitleLock.com today and use promo code Dana.
Brighten up your timely news consumption with a Dana Show podcast, where every update comes with a little dash of not so serious on YouTube, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash with you. We're at the bottom of this third hour. Listen coast to coast. You can also find us channel 347 on DirecTV, X, Rumble, all that good stuff. So very interesting headline that I had to double check to make sure it was real. Chinese officials are reportedly seeking to discuss fentanyl and the fentanyl ingredients amid all of this stuff with the trade war. Apparently, it was reported that their minister of public security has made some inquiries over the past few days. Now, I don't know what that means. Like, can we talk to you about fentanyl? Can we have a talk? How does that even work? So to talk to us about this, our very good friend, Stephen Yates. You know him. He's on the show regularly. You can find him on X at YatesComs. Yeah, YatesComs. And of course, he worked in not one, but two previous presidential administrations. And he is the senior research fellow at the Heritage Foundation. He joins us now, not via Skype, because Skype is now dead. Stephen, it's good to talk with you. What does that mean when they say, yeah, we're interested in talking about fentanyl? Like, okay, so talk.
Yeah, well, for you and me and everyone with common sense, that should be the reflex. For the Chinese communists, they seem to have been taken a little by surprise. And I say this not to make excuses for them, because I don't and would never, and I'd rather they go die under a tree. But they seem to have been scratching their heads that Americans might be serious, that they shut the flow of this poison that has been killing hundreds of thousands of Americans. Mm-hmm. And that's not actually negotiable. We don't need to talk about it. Just do it. And if you do it, then we can go on to negotiate other things. It was a bit of a test.
Yeah.
So here they waited through the first 100 days of the Trump administration, not doing the things they knew that the Trump team was telling them they needed to do, and escalating the rhetoric on all the other forms of tariffs. And then they start sending their surrogates to D.C. to talk to the tanks where they have China programs that actually come and go to China, unlike mine. And they start saying, hey, well, what does Trump want? What does the administration need? What are we really trying to negotiate? And for whatever reason, they'll come around and they'll have their friends come ask me because they don't ask directly to me. And I should say, well, you know, this isn't rocket science. Said right from the outset, the very first tariffs that were levied were linked to stop the fentanyl precursors. This isn't really an academic debate. Right. They know who's doing it. They know where they're doing it. They know where the money's being laundered, and they can stop it 100% in a day if they're so motivated. And if you wonder, look how quickly they locked down the entire city of Shanghai when they wanted to or needed to. Look how they stomped on Hong Kong when they wanted to or needed to. This isn't academic. So that's the dance that we're playing right now. I think the president wants to make a deal to rebalance the economic relationship. But I think he correctly, and I hope he sticks to his guns about it, said this fentanyl thing is not actually negotiable. Do something meaningful that we can verify and measure, and then we'll talk about the other things.
Yeah, that makes all the sense in the world, because they were saying it. I think it was Fox and others that reported these, you know, Chinese government officials were, well, what does the administration, they were asking, what does the administration want us to do about the inputs for fentanyl? Well, stop sending them to the cartels. I mean, it's just that simple. Maybe stop having that kind of relationship with the cartels. It's interesting, too, whenever they talk about fentanyl, Stephen, they never mention that aspect of the equation. They never talk about their association with the cartels, which they kind of treat the cartels like that, like they're their own independent sovereign entity.
Right. Well, and they seem to have no shame in that association. Now, we shouldn't expect communist parties to have too much shame. But at the same time, that is the other reason why I think that fentanyl precursor materials, not the stuff that's used to treat pain in surgeries and hospitals, right, or whatever else, but the illicit precursors should be listed as WMD. Because then we are listing not just the vehicles for bringing these things into our country, the cartels, but also the substance themselves. And it double brands. Okay, China, you want to be a world leader saying you're upholding rules and norms, you're trafficking in weapons of mass destruction. And so go ahead, Europe. You want to warm up to someone trafficking in weapons of mass destruction? That's your association now. And I think that might do something that has been more than just get talks going. But really, we're dealing with bad people who've been willing to kill a lot of Americans already. We shouldn't be surprised they make this hard and they don't operate under our logic.
The New York Times had, we're talking with our friend Stephen Yates, the New York Times had the headline is China looks for a way out of U.S. trade deadlock. Fentanyl could be the key. Is their willingness to discuss fentanyl, you think, kind of maybe the beginning of waving a white flag on this trade war?
Well, from what I hear, and my information is as imperfect as everyone else's in this regard.
I feel like you know a little more than everybody else. Let's be honest about it. Come on.
Goalposts seem to shift in the life we live now at light speed and Trump speed for news cycles. But what I think has been very, very clear is that the president is interested in talking to Xi Jinping. He's just not interested in conceding in advance. The Chinese side is trying to intimate they're not interested in conceding in advance. But I think that the president has rightly held out fentanyl as something different. It shouldn't be negotiable. Right. And so if they want to have talks about what to do about fentanyl, they're wasting their time. They know what needs to be done and with whom, and they can do that. And if they won't do that, what should that tell any reasonable American, European, Asian, or otherwise about how can you negotiate and deal with this kind of government if they won't do this? If they were poisoning your children, would you negotiate free trade with them? Right. It's insane. It has to be the prerequisite from my point of view. I'm not the president. No one elected me, and he hasn't asked for my advice. But for free of charge, Mr. President, I think you're on the right track and stick to your guns on this.
That's a good. I would say that they should listen to you. I mean, you were there before, and you've had other POTUSs listen to you. We're talking with our good friend Stephen Yates at Yates Comms on X. So in the Pacific, we have obviously the threat of China. And then we focus so much on the Middle East. But then recently, and this is where I wanted to get kind of your experience and expertise on this, because, you know, with the dismissal of Mike Waltz being where he is now, he's going to be the UN ambassador. I don't feel like that all happened because of the signal leak. I feel like that happened because of Iran and how you have these two different factions in the administration that don't seem to be on the same page with us. Trump and I think Vance, for the most part, seem to be more of let's approach this diplomatically. We don't want to either look like we're going towards conflict with Iran or have or commit to anything like that. But then you have others, you know, more like Tom Cotton and some other folks that are there. Lindsey Graham, who absolutely, you know, every to them, everything is a nail there, the hammer. They want to bomb Iran. I mean, it seems like there's these two factions competing in the administration. What do you make of this? And what does that forecast for how we're going to deal with them?
Well, this is a hard challenge. You're not wrong about the mixed forces. And the reason there are those mixed forces is because the United States has tried a lot of different things. And what we know with a certainty is the things that were tried before mostly didn't work. The thing that worked the best was Trump 1.0's maximum pressure and Abraham Accords combo seemed to put us, our allies in the region, in the best possible position, at least since the 1970s. And that's not for nothing, but it also didn't solve the problem, and the problem might not be solvable with acceptable risk on our part. That's the reason why it's a hard job to be president. And it's a hard job to advise presidents. I have no idea what the true sort of tinder was that lit things off to make a change for the national security advisor. I would say that whenever there is really sensitive negotiations going on, everyone is at risk of getting a little out on their skis or out of step with the president. And this administration in the first 100 days had like three or four very sensitive and complicated negotiations going on at the same time. Never seen anything like that before. And so the risk of sort of crossing wires at some point and wanting change is going to be really high. And it's going to be high for whoever has that position under those circumstances, I would assess. But in dealing with Iran, I think the president is trying to see, is there some kind of deal to be had? I actually kind of doubt there is. What are our allies looking for? I mean, Israel is still having to try to defeat Gaza, and there's still a lot of people in the international community trying to hold them back from doing it. And the Iranian threat of having a nuclear weapon, that's obviously aimed at Israel and aimed at the United States. And so this is not easy stuff, and China and Russia aren't making it any easier. So this people talk about three-dimensional, four-dimensional chess. I don't understand that. I could never play it. But this is kind of what the president is facing. And I think it's really hard. Most of the building blocks he's trying, I think, are on the right track. But we can't count on the bad people coming along and getting with the program.
I know that Oman was hosting, I think the last, like a week ago, they were hosting some talks, I think with Steve Witkoff and others. From what I was reading, there was supposed to be another round of talks this week, and that ended up ultimately being canceled because you mentioned the Abraham Accords. And I'm thinking, you know, a nuclearized Iran is way more dangerous to a lot, like, you know, the I go back to like the Sunni Shia conflict, and they're way more dangerous than, you know, to this, as much as they are dangerous to Israel and the United States. I would imagine they're super dangerous on those terms to Saudi Arabia as well. It just seems like all that's reported about their involvement is just hosting talks and maybe doing some mediation. Is there more to it than that that's just not getting reported?
I strongly suspect there's a lot more going on with our major allies in that region. When I say major, I mean those that right. have the financial and military means to make a meaningful difference in shaping the region. And so I think the United Arab Emirates punches above its weight in that regard. I think Saudi Arabia is vital in trying to keep some sense of balance. This isn't a question of, do you love every part of every kingdom that you deal with? It's a matter of, do you have a coalition that can keep the darkest genie in a bottle order for the rest of us to have an alternative path to peace and prosperity? And with those, I think the president is scheduled in the not too distant future to go spend several days over in the Middle East, and will have very, I think, in-depth and serious and, I think, very blunt talks with leaders over there that will be on the Iran situation and what's the end state for the Gaza situation and what America can do and can't do and what they need to do and listen to them also. I mean, that's the undertold story. As people talk about Trump being a certain way, but he actually is doing a lot of listening to the allies that are serious about sharing risk and resources to address these things. So he'll hear what the Saudis and the Emiratis have to say and what the Israelis have to say. And that's vital to trying to chart this path forward.
There you go. Stephen Yates, always the expert. See, you need to be telling the administration. You need to be right. I would feel better. I would feel better knowing that. Stephen
Yates. Just hope they're tuning in. And, you know, this is managerial excellence, free of charge.
There you go right there. At YatesComms on X. Go and find him. He has all kinds of good stuff that he puts out there regularly. Stephen, always a pleasure. Thank you, my friend.
Good. Thank you, Dana. Take care.
You too.
Brighten up your timely news consumption with a Dana Show podcast, where every update comes with a little dash of not so serious on YouTube, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the program. A little We Care a Lot from Faith No More, which was so great. By the way, so we're talking about, I eat a late lunch. I have the weirdest eating schedule because we're on air in the middle of the afternoon. And I'm going to say something that's probably very unpopular, the Cinco de Mayo, but I'm going to say it.
What?
Yeah. I love Taco Bell, and it's amazing, and I'm tired of pretending that it's not.
Oh, man.
Kane and I.
You could have chose any other day of the year.
No, dude. No. It's like I pull up and I have them. Like, it's amazing. Right? It's like so fast.
Wait. You just pull up and then you have them?
I have them. So good. Oh, my gosh. It's like when you pull up to a fast tamale spot, and they're like, here, and you just have them. And, oh, man, by the way, your mom, I wanted to hire your mom to make some more tamales, by the way.
Oh, man.
She makes
good.
The best ones.
See, that's the kind of, and people know this, especially ones that grew up in Mexican families. You're just like, look, okay, Taco Bell's great.
I know, he's dying right now.
You're drunk at 1 a.m. or whatever, and you need a, you know,
our friend down in KURV is dying right now.
Something that kind of resembles Mexican food. Then, yeah, that's what you do. That's what you do.
It's so good, though. It's like, I'm not saying, I don't even classify it as Mexican food. It's just its own Taco Bell. It's just like its own thing. I mean,
yeah,
that's true. Yeah. Wouldn't necessarily say that it's, yeah. But, oh my gosh, like it's so good. Like they do weird stuff with their breading. That's like the chalupa. What's that? It's a fried taco shell or soft tortilla, whatever. It's so good. I feel like they should advertise on the show, but they don't.
Taco Bell?
Yeah, if I lived next door to one, oh my gosh, I would be 5,000 pounds. I would be on like My Big Life or whatever the hell that's called.
Seriously, you love Taco Bell?
Dude, I love it. I get into weird ruts.
What's your go-to when you go to Taco Bell?
Like, oh my gosh, what isn't? I love any of the cantina things that they got, the fresco stuff, the gordita. I love refried beans so much.
More hard taco or soft taco person?
Yeah. Hard taco is a joke.
What? I love hard tacos.
Hard taco is a joke. It is a trick on you.
What?
It's a joke.
What's the trick?
That it's bad. It looks like you think it's going to be good and it's not. It's bad. It's what it is. But I'm going to get so much hate and I don't even care. I don't even care. It's so good. I'm tired of pretending that's not. And you can get so much. You can get so much for it. Anyway,
right. It is, as far as fast food goes, it's the cheapest out there right now.
And it's healthy. You can get a bowl, not have the
and
breading.
It's healthy. You said those words.
I so did.
In a sentence.
Maha. I think we just killed Kane. We're going to need to call the 911s.
Look, I don't want to, no pun intended, crap on Taco Bell, but.
There's no pun there. It's all beef. It's all beef, my friend. It's all beef. Beef and chicken.
It was definitely a
chicken
pun.
Clucked at one point.
It was definitely a pun there.
Yeah, it wasn't. All right, go ahead with your today in stupidity. You
already?
Hater.
All right.
You hater.
Well, here's, listen to this.
Okay.
Now, this is Jen Psaki. Now, you know the media has been doing this for the past 3 or 4 years. They just denied. As a matter of fact, if you even said that Biden had some cognitive decline, you were attacked.
Stutter.
You were shamed.
You made fun of
all of it. And now, of course, there's plenty of books out there now saying this. Listen to what she says here. Jen Psaki, cut to it.
I never saw that person, not a single time, and I was in the Oval Office every day, that was on that debate stage.
She's the spokesperson.
I'm not a doctor.
The White
Aging
House
happens
spokesperson.
Quite quickly.
And she's still, to this day, claiming that she didn't see a thing. I don't trust
her
judgment.
No one believes that. And if they didn't see it, I don't want these people anywhere near making decisions for the rest of the nation. Yeah, that's stupid. How did you not see him? I mean, the man didn't even know where he was. All right. Does it for us tonight. Sign up at Substack, Chapter and Verse, Facebook, YouTube, like and subscribe. I'll be back with you tomorrow. God bless.